Okay. Thanks for coming, everybody, and thanks so much to Stephanie and Leah for inviting me to come. I confess I've never been to a Computer Society meeting before, but I have been using computers since I was 12 when I got my first Commodore 64, actually a VIC 20 and then a Commodore 64. So I guess I should have come, I just didn't know about it. So Leah introduced me a little, but basically I wanted to say I am an experimental game designer, and I run the Game Innovation Lab at USC, where our mission is to push the boundaries of what games are and what they can be. I come from industry. I spent a number of years in the industry. I had my own company and doing multiplayer games. And at a certain point, I decided I wanted to give back, and I changed. I did a career shift, and I went into academia to help build the games program at USC when it was still a novel idea that one would have a program which is a mixture of art and technology, teaching the techniques and the craft of game design. So in addition to the program, we also created the Game Innovation Lab as a research center. So myself and the other faculty and students and staff who work in the Game Innovation Lab are essentially researchers in games, which is another sort of novel idea. We make projects sponsored by foundations, by grants, that ask interesting questions and try and push the medium forward. And we've made all sorts of games. I have some up here which you may or may not recognize, some of which have been released commercially, like the one up in the center is called Flow and was a big hit on the PlayStation 4. The Little Man with Umbrella, it's called The Misadventures of Pee-wee Winterbottom, was also a big hit on the Xbox. On the right is another game called The Unfinished Swan, which was on the PlayStation. There are some games for virtual reality here, and some games for educational interventions to help students to learn through gameplay. So we've done a lot of different types of games over the years that we've had the lab. Just over 10 years ago, I had an idea to create a game based on Henry David Thoreau's Experiment in Living at Walden Pond, which is a kind of strange idea, I understand. But I'll explain a little bit how I got to it. And I'll just say that the game was released this past year on PlayStation, PC, Mac, and it's coming this year to Xbox. And it's done really well for a game that really has two audiences. It's an educational game, but it's also an entertainment game. And I think of it something like one might think of as a documentary film, right? So where it has an educational value, but also is something that just people want to watch, to be entertained by. So I want to show a little trailer so you have context for what I'm talking about. But then I also brought it on PlayStation. And so I plan to sort of fire it up and demo it. And I think I have some volunteers to do the demoing while I answer some questions a little bit later on. So let me show you a trailer. Can you see over my head? Or?
What if we could all go to the
woods? No, I need my notes.
Deliberately.
Thank you.
Henry.
Play as Henry David Thoreau in Walden again.
So, Thoreau is best known for his writings on nature and philosophy and civil disobedience in particular. And these writings have inspired generations of activists and environmentalists and those seeking inspiration in nature. But for me, my connection to Thoreau began as a youngster. My father, whose family is all from the Boston area, always wanted us to read books by local authors when we went on vacation. So, whenever we'd go to a gift store and we wanted to buy us something, he would only say yes if it was a book by a local author. And so since we went to Massachusetts quite a bit to visit family, I was always being handed copies of books by the authors from Concord, Massachusetts, including Thoreau. And so when I first read Walden, I was initially captivated by the dream of going to live in the woods in a cabin and that sort of romantic ideal that's often associated with Thoreau. And I actually remember building a lot of make-believe cabins out behind my aunt and uncle's house, which is on a pond not far from Walden. And so that's what stuck with me about the book for a very long time after reading it as a youngster. And then, of course, when I got older, I was assigned to read it in high school and then again in college, and I came to it with a really different mindset and context. I took away new inspirations from the book, reading it as an adult. And these were ideas that reflected more than just the adventure of living in nature. Now I was interested in activism and justice and the relationship between the individual and the state, as well as the individual and nature. But it wasn't until 2002 when I was visiting the pond again, and I reread the book while I was there, and I started to realize just how much more there was to the text and to Thoreau's experiment in living. And I also began to see for myself just how topical the ideas and the questions that he was asking were to us today. So the question of living deliberately, which is the essential question that he set out to answer, he posed this question at a time when technology and communications were just beginning to speed up the pace of life at that time. So for us today, it's become the central question of our lives, how technology speeds up our lives and makes it better, but also takes up a lot of our time, right? And actually has changed the pace of how we experience the world. For Thoreau, it was the telegraph and the railroad. For us, it's digital media and the internet and things like biotech. As I pondered this question and the questions he was asking, I began to think about what it would be like to try to do Thoreau's experiment myself. But, of course, today the pond is restricted land, and the paths around it are all fenced in. It's been preserved for visitors, but only at a surface level, really. You can't build a cabin there or even stay overnight. You can't climb to the top of Emerson's Cliff to look at the pond from the highest vista. The pond now closes at 7:30, so you're technically not even supposed to be there to watch the sunset on some nights. Today the pond is a very busy place, and really solitude is the last thing that you can find at Walden Pond, ironically. So as I was walking the perimeter of the pond on that day that I was visiting, I started thinking about what it would mean to create a virtual version of the pond, and a virtual version of Thoreau's experiment, that was a dynamic and explorable world that could bring the ideas and the themes that he was writing about to people who could not experience them at Walden Pond or maybe couldn't experience them living in urban centers, not close to nature, as many young people reading the book today are. So they're not in a place where they could experience the ideas that he's talking about. The question then remained how to do it. How could I build this world? So when I began working on the game, the first thing that I did was I went out and I bought a stack of really nice copies of Walden for the team at the Game Innovation Lab. And I brought it in and I started a reading club. And we would all read it, and then we'd underline the parts that were meaningful to us, and we'd come in and we would share those with each other and talk about the themes of the book and talk about, you know, how Thoreau spent his time and the activities and what were some of the things that might be translatable into gameplay. So during the entire production, which I think I mentioned took almost a decade, that book was a touchstone. So we still have those ragtag copies of those books with all those underlines in them that were our touchstone. Every time we had a question about how should we do this in the game, how should we make this work in the game, we'd always go back and look at the book for an answer. And over the course of the production, we had also the opportunity to work with a number of Thoreau scholars to understand the themes more deeply and you know, things that the historical context, which we were not experts in, but we became somewhat of experts. So we wanted to give context not only for our understanding of the book, but also the historical context that caused him to write the book. Everything from the styles of dress that might be in the game to the plants and the animals that made up the environment to kind of the social and political movements that he was reacting against when he went to the woods, things like expansionism and slavery, all the tensions that are sort of the pre-Civil War tensions that he was reacting against. And all of this scholarly input into the game was made possible because we received grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts, and we were supported by the Sundance Institute for Storytelling to really help us bring this to life. So all of these advisors and mentors were really invaluable in helping the team to understand the complexity of Thoreau's vision. We actually even had an opportunity to visit and read from the original handwritten manuscripts of Walden because they're housed, funnily enough, in the Huntington Museum, the Huntington Library in Pasadena, which is odd and not something I didn't know before I started working on this, but they're right here locally. They're just a freeway's drive away from USC, and it so happened that when we went to visit there, they had on display the original printer's proofs from the book with Thoreau's notes for the printer. And the very page that they had on display, the very proof page that they had on display was turned to a quote. And that quote was the very quote that we had all underlined that inspired one of the core features of the game. And that is seeking balance between the basic necessities of life, food, fuel, shelter, clothing, and then with one's remaining time in life, to seek out the more ephemeral spiritual needs, the connection to nature, right? What he calls the true problems of life. So there are many, many important themes in the book. And it was important to us not only to illuminate this one theme, which is the core mechanic, the core activity that players engage in as they play the game. We wanted it to have not only a survival aspect, which is what most people think of when they think of him going down to the woods to live, but we wanted to have this sort of multifaceted, almost reflective feeling where you could walk away with an understanding of something that was important to you, an insight that was important to you at that particular moment. But we knew we needed this central mechanic to bring all of those reflective strands together. And so Thoreau's fascination with what it takes to really strip life down to its basic was what we used as the central activity of the game. Now, the way that we work out new game ideas in the Game Innovation Lab is a little bit different than a lot of game studios because we are not building on existing genres of gameplay. We're not making We're not just going to go out and make another first-person shooter. We're not going to make, you know, another real-time strategy game. We are trying to build something entirely new. And the way to build something entirely new is not to just dive in and start coding it. It's to prototype it in the simplest, easiest, fastest way so you can iterate and find out what's going to work and what's not going to work. So we first prototype using paper and very, very rough digital models. And we don't start developing any of the art or animation or any of the really cool technology parts that we're all so familiar with when we think of games until we have understood those basic underlying structures that we're going to build. So that's what we did with Walden. We broke down the system that Thoreau described into a model of how he lived. And, of course, for practical reasons, that model had to be very simple. I mean, we didn't want you to have to worry about every single piece of food you were going to eat or, you know, nailing every board into the shelter, right? So we had to abstract it. And we broke it into the four basic necessities of food, fuel, shelter, and clothing. And there are many things in the world that you can pick for food, but then you don't have to worry about eating it. It's just assumed that you eat it once you collect it. We didn't want the game to be a very detailed kind of like OCD experience. We wanted it to be this reflective experience, right? So the process of designing the game was very much about distilling paragraphs or themes into game activities that stood for, in their abstract way, that stood for a much wider range of ideas. And these are actually just some images from the earliest and ugliest prototypes as we were trying to wrap our head around, you know, how we were going to have this underlying system, this needs-based system, and how it was going to balance with the more ephemeral systems. Actually, this one on the upper right is, even though it looks hugely, it's terribly ugly, it actually has almost all of what is in the final game in terms of seeking food and fuel and shelter and clothing and also inspiration, which is how we sort of collectively refer to these more ephemeral needs. You notice that it's a little bit grayed out. The sort of forest you see is kind of grayed out, and that's because the player is actually uninspired at that moment. And so in the game, things become uninspired, they become grayer and more subdued as you are uninspired. And as you're able to spend more time interacting with nature, that inspiration will grow. But so as we progressed, we began to develop this full dynamic world that the game would be played in. And we crafted this world based on a really close indexing of Thoreau's work, so what kind of plants and animals he talks about in Walden, and his own survey. He was a surveyor, so we based it on his own surveys of the pond. And then to get the contours of the land, we took his contour surveys of the pond, and we melded that with modern U.S. geographical data showing the contours of the land. Then we looked back at old maps and tried to rebuild the trails that are no longer there and make it as close to an experience of what he would have had at the pond in that day. So there are some differences, of course, and that has to do with this issue of compression and abstraction. So to walk the entire perimeter of our pond in the game, Walden, takes an entire in-game day. Of course, if you were at Walden Pond, you could walk it in an hour or so. And we did that to emphasize how important time is in the game. Time is one of the most critical resources that we have in life. It's something that Thoreau thought quite a lot about. And so we wanted to make sure that we emphasized how important it was. And so the pond, in a way, feels much larger than it actually is. This is one of our own drawings where we took the contour and then put it on the modern topographical data. And then this is the in-game map. So at wherever you are in the world, you can open up his journal and you will see this map, and it will show you there's a little red arrow there up by the bean field, and that's where you are, and that's where his cabin is. So you can always, you don't get lost in the game because you can always see where you are. So you'll see in a few moments when I start up the game Thoreau's experiment began in the summer, July 4th, 1845. He loved symbolism of numbers and dates, so that was his Independence Day. So, of course, when he went down to the woods on July 4th, it was easy living. In fact, he didn't even need his cabin. He said he could have just lived without it, but he knew that the winter months were coming, so he'd have to build one. But in those early months in the game, surviving in our game is just child's play. And we do that so that you can learn the system without it being too hard at first. So you can pick off berries, you can live off the land very simply. And then as the seasons change, the challenge of meeting your basic needs grows more and more complex. Berries will change. Which berries are in season will change. You have to learn a little bit more about the land, it will start getting colder. It may rain, and on those days you need more firewood, etc. So it becomes more of a complex situation. At the same time as living in the woods becomes more complex and living in nature is more complex, we also start to build in more and more about the personal and historical context. Well, we introduce you to people like Ralph Waldo Emerson. I noticed that we're on Emerson Avenue this evening, and I thought that was very appropriate. Well, we introduce you to Ralph Waldo Emerson, Thoreau's mentor, and you get letters from some of the other famous colleagues and friends. You get letters from his family, and you're sort of introduced to the complexity of his life and some of the personal reasons he may have wanted to sort of step away from society and go to the woods to focus on his work and on understanding life better. One of the things that happened to him, this is an aside, is that he had lost his brother. His brother had cut himself shaving and just within the span of a few days got lockjaw and died in Thoreau's arms. He was devastated, so devastated that he actually developed sympathetic symptoms, and his family thought he was going to die too. But that was just really, it was this psychological grief of not, you know, just not being able to deal, process his brother's death. His brother and he were best friends. They were business partners. They had started an experimental school together. They fell in love with the same girl. They proposed to her and were both rejected. They had a lot in common, and they had gone on adventures together. And in fact, Thoreau's first book was the story of a boat trip that they had taken together not long before John died. And what he was actually doing when he went down to the pond was not writing Walden, at first at least. He was writing that book. And it's a book where he talks about this journey with his brother, and he dedicates it to his brother, but he never uses John's name. It was deeply tragic. Like he was so stoic, but he could not process it. A lot of the reason that I feel that he went to the pond was to process that grief, and that when he says in this famous quote, that he wanted to make sure that when he died, that he didn't feel that he had not lived. I don't feel he's speaking metaphorically. I feel that he's talking about this tragedy, and he doesn't want to waste his life. So we start to be introduced to these things, and as we're introduced to these stories in the game, the seasons change, and it gets harder and harder for us to survive at the same time as it's becoming. The emotional and social storylines are becoming more and more difficult to deal with. And so our lives may have become quite complicated by the time winter sets in the game. And so if we've let all of the quests that friends give us and if we've been following all these storylines, we may be struggling, both emotionally and in the sense of survival. The game develops thematically aligned with the seasons of the year. There's always the option, if we get in too much hardship in terms of survival, to walk into town for supplies. But that may actually drag us into a rabbit hole of doing odd jobs for people and running errands for people. And then once you start earning money, as we all know, then it seems like there's an infinite number of things to spend that money on. And then you have to earn more money and you become a money earner. So we wanted to, in the game, you know, problematize that for players, that you know, people are always saying, a lot of people condemn Thoreau saying, well, he just went home and had his mother do his laundry, right? But I'll tell you, a lot of people, the same people who say that, play this game and they wind up going home, and yes, indeed, you can have your mother do your laundry in this game. She'll also bake you a pie, and you can pretty much couch surf at their house if you want to. And you know, we wanted to put that option in there because we wanted to show that it is difficult to make a choice and stay purely true to a choice. But that doesn't invalidate the experiment just because you weren't 100% pure to the choice of living in the woods. I think it's important to know that we can fail partially and still come away with a deep understanding of something. The long New England winter of the game will test our commitment to this experiment. It's the longest set of seasons in the game. So there are eight seasons in the game, which you might say, wait, there are not eight seasons. But Thoreau thought there should be eight seasons because he thought that the four seasons were not granular enough to fully describe the changes that the world goes through. So he thought there ought to be eight seasons. So we made eight seasons in the game. And three of them are winter seasons, because in New England, that's just how it feels, that there's just the winter will never, ever end. So this long New England winter will test our commitment, and in this, you know, we'll be thinking, my God, will we ever survive? Will it ever become spring again? But even in the depths of winter, we can discover fragile beauties in the woods, and we can go ice skating. And there are things that are only available if we sort of brave these New England woods. By the time we reach the thaw and the spring in the game, we will have weathered not only a year in Thoreau's experiment, but we will have filled our own game journal with ideas and moments of gameplay that hopefully will resonate with us. We actually build our own version of Walden as we play. And in the end, what I really hope is that the game is something that will allow players to create their own unique relationship to this virtual nature, but also to Thoreau's experiment and to his work and ideas. A lot of times it's hard, I think, when young people read this book now. His language is quite verbose and sometimes off-putting. And and I've heard that from people who feel this way, that he's sort of judgmental, that they feel he's very judgmental. And I would remind folks that maybe we were all a little judgmental when we were young. And he was young when he went to the woods. He was young, and he was kind of rebelling against his mentor. So he perhaps does have a bit of a judgmental tone, because he does think he knows better than the rest of people. But he's also the young person's best friend, and I wanted to make a game that maybe was a softer entry point for people who could benefit from his messages, and then go back and read his full work with maybe a deeper understanding of what it might have felt like to be a young man who went off to the woods to live for a year. People often ask me if I think that Thoreau would approve of the game. And isn't it ironic that I made a video game about nature? And, you know, when I get emails from players like these, where people are saying that they feel like they're taking his approach to life into their everyday lives, then that makes me think that he would approve, at least, of the effects of this game. And these are emails just from the public. We also make it available to teachers and to schools. And so we have quite a few letters from teachers who are so excited that their students are actually happy that they're being assigned the row. So, you know, I don't know honestly that Thoreau would play this game. But he had actually quite an adept engineering mind. He was an inventor. He invented a methodology for better pencil making. His father had a pencil making factory, and he has a well, we don't have proof, but there it's sort of generally accepted that he invented a new graphite solution for these his father's pencils. They were the best pencils on the East Coast, and generally thought that he had a patent, although no one actually has a copy of that patent. You know, he had an engineer's mind, and I think he might have appreciated the depth of the simulation, how it is built upon his ideas, and I think that, you know, he might, like I say, he might have appreciated the fact that it was opening up his ideas to new audiences. We've also had the opportunity to show the game in a number of different types of venues. So it's not only available commercially and for educational use, we've also shown it in many, many artistic venues, including the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, the Smithsonian American Art Museum. It's currently in an exhibit at the Smithsonian American History Museum, the Davos World Economic Forum, Sundance Film Festival, and many, many more. And when we've shown it to all these various audiences, we've seen that people can become very absorbed in this experience of Thoreau's world and sort of slow down to experience his pace of life. So in the end, for me, Walden, I feel, is a game about our time on this earth and how we use that time, wisely or not, and the quality of it as it passes us by. And I think that it honors the spirit of the text that it's based on, which is all I can really hope for. I can't possibly hope to make something that is as amazing as the text itself, but I can hope to honor the spirit of it. And so now, what I'd like to do is play a little bit of the game, and then I'll hand it over to one of my hopeful volunteers. To continue playing while I answer some questions. So I'm going to fire it up here. And hopefully, if we've planned well, it will transfer pretty easily.
I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life. To live so sturdily and Spartan-like as to reduce it to its lowest terms, and, if it proved to be mean, to get the whole and genuine meanness of it. Or if it were sublime, to know it by experience, and to give a true account of it.
So I apologize for looking this direction, but it's going to be impossible for me to steer a little bit without looking at it. I'm good at playing it, but not that good. We're put down into the world in a clearing just near his half-finished cabin. And we're told that we can interact with things like arrowheads. So we can take a look at it, or we can pick it up.
When I wrote the following pages, or rather the bulk of them, I lived alone in the woods, a mile from any neighbor, in a house which I had built myself, on the shore of Walden Pond, in Concord, Massachusetts, and earned my living by the labor of my hands only.
So everything in the world is what's called we call inspectable. If you look at it closely, it will give you something that Thoreau thought about it. And these are all quotes from Walden itself, from his journals. There are over 12,000 objects in the world, and all of the quotes change season to season. So sometimes he thinks something different about a pine tree in the spring than he thinks about it in the fall. So all of that will change season to season.
When I first took up my abode in the woods, my house was not finished. It was a pleasant hillside where I worked, covered with pine woods, through which I looked out on the pond and a small open field in the woods where pines and hickories were springing up.
So a lot of folks like to get right away started on building the house. You know, it must be some human impulse in us that we see a half-finished house and we think, well, I'm going to need that. We can get started nailing some of these boards together. It's a little tedious, but sometimes physical labor helps us to think of interesting ideas. Goes pretty quickly, but so now we're seeing that we're actually getting tired, and that's part of the simulation, is that you can't work too much. We don't want you to always work. We want you to sometimes look up and say, what is there to see out in this wide world, and maybe take a walk and get our energy back, right? There's a letter for us here.
July 4th, 1845. Dearest Henry, congratulations on the start of your experiment. I hope that the work goes well and the ideas are fruitful. Mr. Emerson says you are intent to devour yourself in our woods, but I hope that you will remember to take good care and keep yourself well. Your mother worries, as do I. Your loving sister, Sophia.
Oh, I was trying to sneak up on that rabbit, but he ran away. So in the cabin, we'll find our journal. If we click on our journal, we get our map, but we also can see the status of our food, our fuel, our shelter, how inspired we are. And everything that we've looked at, everything that we've done in the world will produce a paragraph of a quote that begins to fill our journal. So that, as I mentioned at the end, we'll have our own version of Walden.
There is some of the same fitness in a man's building his own house that there is in a bird's building its own nest. Who knows but if men constructed their dwellings with their own hands and provided food for themselves and families simply and honestly enough, the poetic faculty would be universally developed, as birds universally sing when they are so engaged.
So our clothes are pretty worn. And we could mend them. There's a mini game for mending them, but I don't think anyone's looking at us, so I'm not going to worry about it right now. We also, our food supplies are about half full, which is okay for right now, but they will start wearing down eventually. There are some other letters from friends who've left them here.
July 1845. My dear Henry. Mr. Emerson has assisted my family in acquiring a house near Concord, and there we are now, writing and living like philosophers, which is to say, with little but happily. I will visit you soon and bring Mr. Garrison of the Liberator. We have all been so inspired by his earnest and unequivocal writings regarding the moral stain of slavery on our nation. Perhaps he will speak at our lyceum on the topic. Yours truly, A. Bronson Alcott.
So as the days pass, you'll get more letters from various people introducing to you to the things that are going on in the world. And as I mentioned, these are both partially meant as a distraction from your main task of living simply in nature, but they're also, they develop a really interesting storyline. Like, for example, Bronson Alcott, who was a good friend of both Emerson and Thoreau, will involve you in the Underground Railroad, which is a fact that Thoreau and his family were deeply involved in the Underground Railroad. And he'll ask you to accomplish quests, helping people move towards freedom, which you can choose to do or not, or sometimes you can try to do and you may fail. It's blueberries, because who doesn't want blueberries? As I mentioned, we already have half a jar of food, so we don't really need that much more. We go down and visit the pond itself. Seems like a good idea. We could fish if we had a fishing rod. There's a really nice fishing spot, but we don't have a rod. But it's telling us that it's marked with an X on our map. So we're where that little red triangle is, and then there's a red X showing us where we left our fishing rod. So if we want to go get it, we can walk out there and find our fishing rod. Looks like there's a lot of fish, so it might be a good thing to do to walk and get out there and go on the fishing rod. Does anybody want to come play a little? It's standard first-person control. You want to give it a try, and I can help you. You can go out and get the fishing rod, or you can do anything you like. And I'm happy to answer questions. Is it cold?
Yeah.
Hi. Thanks for trying. And you can turn around if you're not comfortable too. Pretty much anything in the world is interactable. Some things that if you pull the right trigger, will tell you if you can do things with them. It will, like for example, there's wood along the shore that you can pick up, and it will tell you. Yeah, if there are questions, I'm happy to answer them while Cole gives us a little tour. It's on the top directional button. Yeah. It's a very small team. So we had 5 core team members, myself, a programmer, an artist, a musician, and a quality assurance manager. And then we had some students that would come in and do some animations, you know, one or two animations. Some students would come in and do just a little bit of, like, work on the graphics for us, or the shader programming, or, you know, they would pick out one little section. One person made the animal AI work, right? So, you know, students are interesting to work with. They're not professionals. USC students, exactly. But they did a great job, and it's just that we wouldn't have them for very long, right, because they were in school. You had a question? Oh, I really appreciate that. That's really kind of you.
I am no more lonely than the loon in the pond that laughs so loud, or than Walden Pond itself. I am no more lonely than a single mullion or dandelion in a pasture, or a bean leaf, or a sorrel, or a horsefly, or a bumblebee. I am no more lonely than the millbrook, or a weathercock,
and a day is 15 minutes, to be clear,
or a south wind, or an April shower, or a January thaw, or the first spider in the new house.
Okay, so Walden Pond today doesn't look like this anymore. But there are no photographs of what it looked like exactly when he was there. There are photographs from about 50 years after he was there, in the early 1900s. In the early 1900s, and we tried to make it true to that. We were also trying to make it feel like the Hudson River School of Painting. So there are a lot of paintings of that area of the country that are done in this sort of romantic, realist style by the Hudson River School. And so we were referencing that. So there are people familiar with the idea of shaders. Basically how 3D graphics look. So we use shaders to, they're programs that define how a 3D graphic will look, right? So, for example, putting grain or blur when it's rendered, right? It's also, in our case, how and when it's loaded. So the trees, there are, as I mentioned, there's over 12,000 trees in our forest, but we couldn't possibly have them all running at the same time. So we have a shader that loads and unloads them and then makes them have different levels of detail so that it looks like the forest is consistent. Sometimes you see it popping in and out. You know, any way you want. As you explore the world, the list gets longer of places you can wake up in the morning. Yeah. Yes. Yes. It will. It will actually, the little icon, the firewood icon, will glow green. And when the first time that happens, it tells you that when it glows green, it means you're at capacity. If it goes to red, that's when you're in trouble, because that means you don't have any firewood. And it, when all of your little icons at the bottom start going to red, right now he's doing great, but if they start going to red, if you don't have food, if you don't have fuel, if your shelter's just breaking down, then you begin to lose energy. And you can literally faint from a loss of energy. So, yeah. Did you ever go get it? I wasn't watching. No? Oh, it's right out here at the point. No, keep on going. I'll show you where it is. See, there's a, you can see it right there on the where the squirrel is. Look, there it is. You gotta pick it up. Wait. Oh, there it is. Okay, you got it. So now you have a fishing rod, and that fishing rod is essentially active at all the fishing spots. Use your left trigger. Use your left trigger, pull the left trigger, and it should give you, do you have your, there you go, you got it now, okay, yeah.
I'm wondering, how many people do we have here who can remember Judge Emmons? He lived at the corner of Lincoln and Farragut. He had a beautiful daughter, she was a drum major of the ROTC at M. Judge Emmons wrote an awful nice book about his grandfather, Emerson.
Did he get a fish? Did you get a fish?
Yeah.
Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. I think we have some successful fishing going on here. It's exciting, you know. Oh, the worm. It's a worm. Sorry. Yes, Stephanie. Oh, yeah. I think I've been enough for everybody. I've been at least once, if not more, for everyone in this room. Yes. Yes. Exactly. We don't do that. In fact, Henry was a vegetarian. He ate fish, but so what we have, the conceit that we have is that you can go to the store and buy a wood pile. Am I in the wrong place? A woodshed, and you can buy more food jars to store your food, and so then you're able to build up enough food so that you don't have to find berries in the winter because you've stored enough. He did not. He says specifically that he sold his gun. He had hunted as a young man, but he felt that it was immoral, and he had sold his gun before he went to the woods. Now, there is a famous passage where he says that He would have liked to, or he did, he claims to have slaughtered a woodchuck and ate it like raw, because these woodchucks were destroying his bean plots, and they were like his natural enemy. And so we have woodchucks in there that, you know, you can't attack, but he talks about attacking it when you see the woodchuck. Yeah, yeah. They are all custom hand-done. Yes, so I was talking about the shader, but in addition to... So if you look closely, you can see right now that we're losing inspiration. It's getting a little bit less colorful, maybe, than it was prior. If Cole goes and opens one of the books that are sitting around, there's a book up behind you, up on this rise, and reads from one of the inspirational texts to your left. The other left? Yeah, there you go. The doing the trees is a nightmare. So I went and I spent time taking photographs, and then our artists would paint, because we wanted it to have this painterly style like the Hudson River School. So they're not photographs, but they're based on photographs, and this kind of a melding of photographs and digital paint is what the textures are. And then you'll see that there's a grain, as you read, you may not have noticed it, but we got a little color back into our world. And the more inspirational things, so if you interact with animals, if you interact with books, there are secret spots in the woods, solitude spots that are marked by cairns, and if you find those spots, you'll gain more inspiration. So then your color will begin to rise. More music will come into the world to sort of make the experience feel more rich overall.
My residence was more favorable not only to thought, but to serious reading than a university.
It took us over 10 years.
I was beyond the range of the ordinary circulating library.
Now, not everybody, like the composer didn't work all 10 years.
Circulate around
the world. And as I mentioned, we had students who came on and off during those years. And also, the first 5 years were really minimal. Like, we didn't have any money. We were doing paper prototyping and then that rough digital prototyping I was talking about. And about 5 years in, the NEA changed their funding guidelines to include video games as media artworks. And so we were able to get a very, very small grant from the NEA, National Endowment for the Arts. And we were able to get a small grant from them, very, very small, that allowed us to pay people so that they could legitimately work on the game, as part of their work hours. Right. Those people were staff. We paid them, and their work went into the game. Yeah. We paid them to work on the game. Yeah. Yeah. There's so many things. So in our program, for example, we have students who are studying literally game design, so system design. We also have students who are studying art and animation. We have students who are studying programming, so computer science. And we have students who are studying business of games, audio for games, game user research, which is literally the human-computer interface, the usability of games and the metrics of how people use software. I'm forgetting them all. Game writing. There's so many different specialities. And so what we do is we have our main programs, and then we have cooperative programs with a number of the other schools on campus. So USC Games is something of a hub, if you will, that connects a lot of disciplines together. But if you really want to get involved in game design, I would say to anyone, learn to code. Because even if you're an artist, even if you're a designer, even if you're a producer, you need to understand the basic language of the medium, and that is code, period. You don't have to be the world's best coder if you're a designer. You don't have to, code the underlying systems But you're going to need to code something. At some point, I guarantee on some late night, some people open things up and go, why is it not working? And fix it. Well, this is in Unity, which is a game engine, and it in C#. Actually, because we started so early, part of our code is in JavaScript. I don't even want to talk about that because that was a mistake. But most of the majority of the code that's good is in C#.
Did he have glass in his window?
Yeah.
Or wax paper?
No, I think it's glass. Yeah, yeah. At least that was in the replica. That's what they have, and they're pretty accurate. So, yeah. And he talks about being tight. He talks about it being cool. You know, winter. You know.
Yeah.
Winterized, basically. So I think it's probably glass. Did I see another hand, or? No! I mean, there are AAA games that are based on some of the Tolkien books, for example, but they mostly focus on the fighting. I'm trying to think of some of the other, you know, most people who are going to try and do a really accurate rendition of the storyline of the experience of a book, and in this case, the philosophy of a book, are going to be independent game designers. They're going to be smaller independents. Yeah. This is a crazy idea that I came up with. I was literally at the pond on a rainy day, and so no one was there. So I was walking the pond on a rainy day, and I was, you know, rereading it while I drove across country, and I had come to the end of it. So I sat down under a tree, and I read the end of it on having the pond all to myself. And that's when I thought, no one can have this experience anymore. It's, even though we've preserved the pond, you know, it's just impossible to have the kind of experience that he had. Hey Cole, do you want to try winter while you want to jump to winter and see what that's like? Here, let me show you. I meant to do that earlier. Let's go to. Where's winter? There it is. Thank you. I knew I had a save game for winter. And I'm saying to myself, no one can, you know, come and live at Walden Pond the way that Thoreau did. It's just not possible. And even if you could go to live in nature the way that he did, like a lot of people have tried experiments living in nature. Even if you could do that, now you can ice skate, so you can go all the way out on the pond now. There you go. Even if you could do that, you know, the truth is the people who need it the most, the people who really would, might change their lives, they can't do it. Right, so the kids in urban schools that are forced to read this because it's part of the core curriculum, who don't have any connection or they're just, it doesn't speak to them, right? They can't go and do that. So to me, it's not, you know, it's for people who would like to have that experience, or even people who are housebound. I've gotten letters from folks who have like social anxiety or PTSD who tell me that they come home. Or they stay home and they play this game and they feel, you know, this sense of peace. So I think it's interesting to me how games can be made to service so many other different experiences. Well, the inkling was in 2002 when that day at the pond. I wrote it down in my journal. I was like, I would like to make a game about Walden, but I don't know how. And then I did a bunch of other things, and I made a bunch of other games. And I started the Game Innovation Lab, and I had a team together, and I made a game with an artist, Bill Viola, who really inspired me to take risks. And what do you get?
What's the symbology of the open book with the blank page?
Oh, he's just gone to the end of it. He's just at the end of the book. If he used the back page, he could go. There's more writing in the front. No, it's just he just went all the way to the end. Yeah. But so in 2007, I'd finished several projects that were really risk-taking, and I thought, now is the time to do this. And so that's when I bought the books, and that's when I got the team and together to start working on it.
Good, Henry. Mr. Garrison has heard of your sentiments against slavery in our nation. I know that his recent lecture at our...
Oh, no, I was working... I had knowledge of... When I said I didn't know how to do it, I meant I didn't know how to make a game about Walden, which was... There weren't any games about Walden. There were so.
Or at least clean and unpatched clothes than to have a
no. There, when I went to school years and years ago, there was no such thing. So when I went to school, there was no game programs, and I taught myself programming. I taught myself how to design games, and I went go fish, and I taught myself. I studied theater, English literature, and film.
And I worry for you as well. Be sure to make your way home to us.
No, and then I went into the industry and I worked in the industry, and I worked on games for Sony and Microsoft and I started my own game company, and I worked for MTV. We did jobs for NBC and a bunch of people. So I had worked at game companies. I started my own game company, and I decided at a certain point to go to academia and change my path. Yes. So you were making one of the first what are now called serious games. That's what they call them, right? I think it's a terrible name, but I think it's a wonderful premise, right? Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously one of the first things that people started doing with computers is making games, right? Because it was a great way to test what the computer could do, right? Was to make games. Yeah. Yes, you have another question. Sure. So I would say Oregon Trail. Obviously, Myst. I love Myst. That was a beautiful piece. Also, Animal Crossing was a real inspiration for this. And just sort of the notion of survival games. Although it's a very light survival, it's the sort of notion of survival games, you know. Yeah. You can't die, but you faint. If you lose all of your energy, you will faint, and all your inspiration will go away. So when you wake up, you'll wake up next to a fire, so you will have regained your energy from the fire. But the world will be very black and white, and you will be very uninspired. You hear, it's the conceit is that your friends were not far away. They would have found you and dragged you to safety. So you hear someone like going, "Henry, Henry, are you okay?" And then you wake up, right? So, yes. We didn't have time to do that. That's one of the things that I wanted to do. And in fact, if you stand on the ice in the right place and you look, you'll see that there are fish swimming down there. You can do ice fishing. And he did. He did ice fishing. But we didn't do it for two reasons. One is it was just there were too many permutations that would mess up the mini game, because you'd have to then take the fishing out and dig a hole in the sand. I mean, it was just going to be too problematic. And the second thing is we actually wanted the winter to be much fewer resources, so it'd be harder for you. So you have to learn what plant. There are plants that you can pick to eat in the winter. But you have to learn that, for example, the sumac hang on all the way through the winter, and that, you know, there are certain other plants that if you seek them out and you learn, and you can do research in Emerson's library. I don't think we've gone to town, but you can go into Emerson's library and into town and find out more about these things, right? So no, we thought about that, but we also thought about swimming, which he did a lot of. And we this is a pile of ice. It's the Walden was actually used quite a bit. They would come and cut the ice and ship it down to Boston. So we just have one pile of ice there. So this is actually, Cole, if you look to your left, that cairn there. This is a solitude cairn, and if you stand by the solitude cairn, you gain inspiration. And these are scattered throughout the woods. But the reason we included these is because Bronson Alcott, after Henry died, he went to the place in the woods where Henry's house was, and he laid a stone, and other people started laying stones. And to this day, there's a pile of stones there that people regularly stack into little cairns. So if you go, there's like this ever-changing art object of cairns that people, of stones that people have brought and then stacked and sort of left there as a, to, you know, instead of flowers, they leave stones it is. So we wanted to include that, so we put these little cairns around the area. It's available on the PlayStation Store, or you can go to waldengame.com, and it's available for Mac and PC. You can it's at itch.io, but that's a game distribution channel for independent games. We're also bringing it to Steam, which is the largest distribution channel for independent games. Yes, it costs $18.45, which is obviously the year that Thoreau went down to the woods. But as I was saying to the folks beforehand, we very often put it on sale, so it's worth waiting because we often put it on 50% sale. So I think in another week or so it goes on sale on the PlayStation for 50%, and then, you know, we just recently had it on sale for a couple months on Itch.
The first ice is especially interesting and perfect.
He was talking. I thought someone else was. Are there other questions, or should we start wrapping up?
You find that the greater part of the bubbles, which at first appeared to be within it, are against its undersurface, and that more,
you know,
are,
someone is
the
bottom. What are they making?
While
they're
the
making
ice
a
comparatively solid and dark.
Someone is making one about Lewis and Clark. I can't remember what the game is called or right now who the researcher is, but someone else is making, it's more of a real-time strategy game, not a first-person game. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a question before, Stephanie? Did you have another question before we wrap? Can't remember? Okay, Stephanie? What's my next project? It's for Macintosh and Windows PC, and it requires a fairly modern 3D graphics card, so it does have some. Stephanie, I usually joke and I usually say that my next project is going to be Ulysses by James Joyce, I think it's the funniest answer. But it turns out that they have some pretty severe copyright issues with that. The family doesn't allow people to do stuff, so I guess I won't be able to do that one. The reality is I'm actually working on a personal project. In the same way that this was inspired by my dad, giving us a love of literature, I'm making a game right now about my dad and his sort of last days in our relationship. So it's a personal game. I think we pretty much better wrap up, but thanks, everybody. And thank our demoer, Cole. Yes.